This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Does this Texas baseball team have your attention yet? If it didn't before this weekend, it definitely has it now. Hello again, I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com, and you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. What a week for Texas baseball. What a busy week. In some ways, up and down. A lot of things going on, but it ended with a thrilling comeback win in the ninth inning Sunday to sweep then number two ranked LSU. Texas entered the ninth inning down 6-4. Ended up winning the game. Austin Todd with a walk-off single up the middle. Actually went between the pitcher's legs on the mound. A walk-off single to score Duke Ellis. Austin Todd gets mobbed on his way to second base by the entire Texas roster. And it just capped off what was one of the best regular season weekends for Texas in a long time. I mean, of course, last season's TCU series definitely ranks way up there, but when's the last time Texas hosted this caliber of a non-conference opponent? I think you have to go back to, I believe it was 2008 when Stanford arrived as a top five team. And when's the last time Texas made a statement like this early in the season? So if this Texas baseball team does not have your attention, I don't know what you were doing this weekend if you call yourself a Longhorn fan, because it's the story on the 40 acres right now. And I know the football team just added another big commitment from Willie Tyler, junior college offensive lineman. But of course, the huge news, which Orange Bloods' Jason Sukmel broke, who's also the author of the Something's Brewing podcast on theyak.com, Parker Braun committed to Texas, a graduate transfer offensive lineman from Georgia Tech, a two-time All-ACC selection. A huge, huge addition to the football team. That is an instant impact guy that it's capable of being the best player on the offense. No disrespect to Sam Ehlinger, but Parker Braun arrives with the most impressive set of accolades of anybody on the Texas roster. So that was going on this weekend, but the story was really this basketball team. Can you tell I do a basketball and a baseball podcast? The story on the 40 acres was really this baseball team. From the great turnouts, and even Sunday when it was just miserable outside. I mean, I joked, I posted this on Orange Bloods and Twitter that, you know, Coy Cobb went out there in the first inning. Most of the defense behind him looked like it was just to rob a bank with those, like, the black, like, you know, the whole black thing that goes above the face, and you just see the eyes. Like, everybody had layer after layer after layer on, and Coy Cobb is out there with no long sleeves. But it was just miserable conditions, and it wasn't a sold-out crowd, but it's still a good crowd. It was still a crowd that was more energetic than it should have been given the conditions outdoors. And of course, Friday and Saturday were both sellouts, both great atmospheres as well in some cold weather. So the baseball team emerged as the story of the weekend. And I think it's created a lot of buzz. Earlier in the season for Texas baseball than I can remember in a long time. I mean, even going back to the team that made the College World Series in 2014, obviously last year's team entered with, you know, they were 9-9 at one point and you know, didn't start the season like this, obviously. But even going back to that 2014 team, they had a brutal schedule like this Texas team has as well, and kind of up and down early on, and didn't really have everybody locked in after a couple of disappointing seasons. You know, you forget after 2011 making it to Omaha, the 2012 and 2013 seasons were not good at Texas. Very, very uncharacteristically poor seasons. In 2014, people are kind of wondering, is this it for Augie Garrido? Like, is he coaching for his job? And of course, that team ended up making a run to the College World Series despite not hosting a regional, ended up hosting a super regional. So it's been a long time since Texas baseball has really captured people's attention this early on, like it did this weekend. So we'll talk a lot about the LSU series. I wrote a column today at OrangeBloods.com just kind of recapping everything. My main takeaways, some quotes from players, some quotes from David Pierce just about, you know, what they thought of the weekend, their main takeaways as well. But I want to start with the UTSA game on Wednesday. It was the first time David Pierce lost a home midweek game. I believe he was 19-0 entering that game. And I kind of wondered, playing a double midweek game coming off of a four-game series, and then you're playing LSU in this weekend series, it kind of set up to not be an ideal situation for Texas. I'm not making excuses for them. They should have clearly won the game. When you play that many games in that many days, sometimes you might have a stinker of a game. And Texas was actually up in that game 6-0. It looked like it was going to take total control and just kind of cruise to another midweek victory. Ended up losing that game 10-7. It was brutal. The defense fell apart. The pitchers couldn't throw strikes. After the offense started really hot, it couldn't get things going early on. Later on. And it's just like, ugh, that's how you're going to enter the LSU series? And we met with David Pierce on Thursday to preview the LSU series. And he doesn't normally talk to his team after games. It's just kind of his approach with things. I think that he views it as, I don't want to be too emotional one way or another when I speak to these guys after the result. It's best to let them think about it, let me think about it, you know, regroup, talk about it the next day, and then go about your business. There has been one time where he had talked to the team, which was after Saturday's game, the second game against Purdue, when Texas lost that game, and it was pretty clear the coaching staff was frustrated with what had happened and actually met with them after the game. So David Pierce normally doesn't meet with the team, and he didn't meet with the team after Wednesday's loss. The players said that there was not really much said. Everybody kind of understood that was an embarrassing loss, that was a game that they should have won. So I found it very, very interesting. We were talking to Michael McCann after Sunday's game. And Pierce told us Thursday about it's all about wiping the slate clean. We got to tell these guys just to flush this, forget about it. Let's move on. These sorts of things happen. It shouldn't have happened, but it happened. Okay, let's forget about it. It's in the past. Well, McCann told us that Thursday, actually, in their team meeting, which occurred right after Pierce and some players met with the media, I guess in the clubhouse or whatever, you know, the team meets and he's addressing the team and he's standing there and he's got his notes and he's got his box score from the Wednesday UTSA game. And McCann described him also as having like a metal bucket. And he basically told the team, you know, we need to wipe the slate. We need to forget about this game. And he took those notes and he took the box score. He took a lighter and he set him on fire and he threw him in the metal bucket. Like, he literally burned the box score from that baseball game as to say, hey, look, we are moving past this thing. We're moving past it. And to his credit, his team absolutely did move past it. They came out and they totally outplayed LSU in game one. They totally outplayed LSU in game two. And in game three, when they had a really could have folded, they could have just said, you know what? This weather sucks. The guy on the mound is throwing 97 miles an hour. We've already got a series victory. LSU's number two in the country. Let's just pack it in. We've got our series win. We don't need a sweep. No, Texas did not accept that. Not in the face of errors that led to LSU runs. Not in the face of dudes on the mound that were throwing the ball really well. They said, uh-uh, no, we're not going to go down without a fight. They come back and win that game. So I think that Thursday meeting, I believe, really helped set the tone for what followed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Because, you know, such a big part of being a coach and being a part of a coaching staff is understanding the psyche and the pulse of your clubhouse. And for baseball, that's a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys in that clubhouse. And everybody's got to be marching forward in the same direction. You've got to have all those guys with a similar frame of mind that are about the program. And I think that going in there and say, in kind of a creative way that was going to make it kind of a lighthearted situation, but also as to dramatically say, hey, look, let's get this out of our mind. I think that helped set the tone for what ended up being a huge weekend for Texas. So, again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebuds.com. Going through some of my main takeaways from the LSU series. I mentioned that Texas really outplayed LSU in both those first games and that Sunday game. They came back. I thought the Sunday game was a really, really good example of what we've seen from this Texas team so much this season, is that they almost always respond in the face of adversity. You can only really think of The Purdue Saturday game, the second Saturday game against Purdue, and then also the UTSA game. And really, Texas has responded very well in every other situation. Even that loss at Louisiana, they loaded the bases with two outs in the ninth inning with a chance to tie that game after being down 8-1. I thought it was the best example we've seen this season of them responding and just refusing to be beaten. And you could see it in individual instances as well. And I thought that ninth inning especially, you've got Todd Peterson on the mound for LSU, who, by the way, he gave up a run in the eighth inning. Ryan Reynolds hit an RBI double. By the way, Ryan Reynolds is having an awesome season so far. I know he's had a couple of uncharacteristic defensive miscues, like he airmailed a throw in that Sunday game, which was a pretty, not a routine play, but a play he could have made. He airmailed the throw, and he's had a couple other throws and a couple of bobbles here and there. He's also had some really, really good defensive plays at times as well. But he's cut down his strikeout rate so much. I need to go. I know I had it written in my notes somewhere. He was at about 22% last year in terms of his strikeout percentage, which is it's not extremely high, but it's high, especially for a college hitter. You'd like that number to be much lower. Well, it's 8.6% this year. He's really lowered that. He's hitting .388. He's getting on base at .483, and he's slugging .571, and he's hitting the ball to all fields. So that RBI double in the eighth inning was big. It really helped Texas feel like it was still in striking distance, kind of get some of that momentum back in the dugout. But Peterson comes off the mound in the eighth inning and stares down the Texas dugout after he strikes out Tate Shaw on what was a slider that was off the plate. But college umpires, I mean, that's going to get called more often than not. But still, why are you staring down the Texas dugout? You just gave up a run. It's not like you just blew fastball by a guy swinging to strike him out. I mean, that was weird. And it definitely, the Texas dugout absolutely noticed it. And I'm telling you, some people just mock the idea of a team like needing extra, whatever you want to call it, to get up and fight more. Texas baseball thrives off that stuff, man. They really do. Ever since I've covered them, no matter who is the coach, no matter who is in the locker room, whatever, they seem to really thrive with that stuff. So Texas comes out in the ninth inning, and it was probably the best example of competitiveness in the batter's box, refusing to be beaten, and staying with the approach. And, you know, Duke Ellis is at bat. Well, first it starts with Michael McCann acting, did a great acting job, getting hit by a pitch. He sold the umpire that it grazed him. And then Paul Maneri gave apparently a ridiculous excuse after the game. He told the beat reporter from NOLA.com that the umpire told him it nipped his shirt, and he didn't think that it would be reversed because the umpire said that, and he didn't want his pitcher to stand out in their cold while they reviewed it. Okay, good one, Paul. I'll have that work out for you. Anyway, McCann gets on first base to begin the inning. And that just kind of, you know, from there was like, all right, Texas just kind of had that bounce in their step. Like, we're just going to find a way. Duke Ellis had a sensational at bat against Peterson, just fouling off pitch after pitch, just missing a couple pitches, spoiling some other pitches. Great pitch selection. Well, Peterson makes a good pitch, and Ellis is forced to protect. And he does. He puts the ball in play. He hits a slow chopper to shortstop. Bang, bang play. Ellis beats it out. And they go and review it in, you know, the Texas – shout out to the Texas – whoever's controlling the music. They were playing Journey's Don't Stop Believin' as the umpires were reviewing it. They come back. They rule it safe. That was just a great example of a guy that was like, you know what? I'm not going to get beat. I'm going to put the ball in play in this situation and make these guys make a play, or I'm going to get walked, or I'm going to get a hit. He had already struck out three times earlier in that game. But he just stuck with his approach against a guy that's, again, throwing 97 miles an hour with an 88-mile-an-hour slider, one of the better relievers in the SEC. So he fights his way to get on base. And then you've got Eric Kennedy, who's kind of doing the same. He covers the plate so well for a freshman. He was named Big 12 Newcomer of the Week this week. And he's actually been unlucky in terms of statistics when you consider how well he's hit the ball sometimes. But his numbers are starting to catch up to the at-bats he's had. So he gets in there. He's covering the plate. He's battling. He wasn't going to get beat on two strikes. He put the ball in play. Unfortunately for him, it went right back to the pitcher. But on the throw to second base, it just wasn't caught cleanly. The shortstop ended up missing the bag, and then Kennedy beat out the throw at first base. So that kept the inning alive. Then you had Lance Ford in there as well at one point. His first appearance of the game, putting down a perfect sack bunt to put two guys in scoring position. That was just, you know, for a freshman in that moment, that's a big play. I mean, it's as Texas showed all weekend, it's not easy to get bunts down all the time because they had some guys that really struggled with it. And then the at-bat of the game, really, with Todd, he gets a slider first pitch, and he sees it well. It's out of the zone, and he's ready when Peterson, despite throwing as hard as he does, comes back with another slider, and he leaves it over the plate. Rather than try to yank that thing out of the yard or pull it or do too much with it, he stays right on it. He hits it really hard back up the middle. It goes through Peterson's legs. It's hard enough to get through the infield. Ellis comes around and scores and wins the game. So I thought that was just a terrific example of competitiveness, sticking with approach. Just, you know, David Pierce said it, just playing the game. Just, you know, make the other team make plays. Play the game. You know, if all you can do is put the ball in play, put it in play, use your speed, try to beat it out. Stick with your approach. If you get a breaking ball to hit, don't try to do too much with it. Just shoot it back up the middle. So I thought that was a great example of just this team's mentality. And really, there's no other better example right now than Ellis. He's got 21 walks. He's getting on base at, you know, 50% of the time he's getting on base. He's got a 500 on base percentage. In this weekend against LSU, and shout out to the, you know, the Texas staff for, you know, Carly Todd, their the director of player development. Forgive me the stat. Duke Ellis saw 85 pitches against LSU. 85 over three games. Think about that for a moment. That's like an entire starter's workload in a game. 85 pitches in three games. You know, I'm not sure how many plate appearances he had, but that's probably something like six pitches a plate appearance. So he's essentially getting to a full count every single time he's in the batter's box or fouling off a bunch of balls or whatever. And that's a very underrated thing at the top of the order when you have a guy that can consistently put together those types of competitive at-bats and see that many pitches and give his team information about what's going on. So David Pierce had a good quote just about what they did at home plate. He said, I just think you look at the entire weekend, we were just so tough at home plate. At times we had dominating pitching. At times we had superb defense. But we were really tough at home plate with plate discipline and a lot of gritty performances by our guys. And that's the Texas lineup. I mean, Austin Todd said it. There's no Cody Clements. But there's just a bunch of guys that just don't want to get beat. And I think if you look top to bottom of that Texas lineup, there's no star. You know, and perhaps Todd could turn into that. I think down the road, Kennedy could become that. But there's no Clemens. There's no guy that I think is going to push for All-American candidacy. But what they have is a bunch of guys that could be solid college hitters. Could be guys that are capable of coming up that big hit or getting on base or posting solid numbers throughout the season. So, you know, and Pierce specifically talking about that ninth inning, he said that's the thing. It's so hard for young people to just not get emotional and play the moment, and that's what we need to do is just stay in it and look ahead as opposed to what just possibly negatively happened. So we want to continue to play and keep our minds as clear as we can to give ourselves a chance. That's just a perfect example of hanging in there. And, you know, you've got the crowd going nuts. I think human nature would dictate that against that kind of pitcher on the mound, you want to maybe overswing. You want to try to hit the big homer. You want to try to hit the big ball in the gap. You want to try to expand the zone to make sure you put the ball in play. And Texas didn't do that. And that really what was the difference between them and getting a series win and getting a sweep. So looking back at the first two games, I thought it was not only a big test this weekend for Texas, but it was a big test for Bryce Elder as well, because no offense to Louisiana and Purdue, but their lineups simply aren't as talented as LSU's lineup. And, you know, I kind of wondered, okay, you get into a lineup like LSU, I mean, he's probably not going to see a more talented 1-4 in a lineup this season. LSU's is loaded. It's one of the best in the country. And Elder was really, really good. Even on a night when he didn't have his best stuff, I really didn't use the curveball much at all. The changeup was there occasionally, but really he was a sinker cutter guy. And he commanded it, and he competed, and he got swings and misses. And he now has a 0.44 ERA this season. So I think we can say confidently that Bryce Elder is for real. I think there's nothing about his numbers so far that have been a fluke. Is he going to have this ERA all season? No. No. That's it's going to go up at some point. But he looks like a guy that could be one of the better Friday night pitchers in the Big 12, which is saying a lot because the league is loaded this year. The league is going to have some guys that get selected high in the Major League Draft. So I thought it was big for him to get out on the mound against LSU. Not that he needed confidence because you watch him compete. He doesn't lack it. He doesn't lack a fiery competitiveness either. But to go out there and execute in that moment against LSU says a lot about him moving forward. And he avoided my jinx. I actually wrote a big feature story at orangewoods.com just about his very unique journey. If you have the time, please go read it. It's a free story if you're not an Orange Buds member. It's on my Twitter page, DMcComasOB on Twitter. Just his extraordinary journey from high school golfer to Friday night starter. I mean, his commitment story is kind of wild, how he basically had no Division I offers. He got into an all-star game he shouldn't have been in. He reached out to the Texas coaches. Philip Miller came and watched him for an inning. Elder joked that he wasn't very good that inning, so he thought he blew his chances. He was actually about to board a plane to go to New Mexico for an official visit because New Mexico had offered him, and Texas called him as he was getting on that plane. He said, "Hey, I got to take this visit, but you know, I'll call you as soon as I'm done." As soon as he came back from that visit, he called Texas and committed. But just a wild story about how a guy that basically didn't play baseball until rediscovering his love for it as a junior, pitched back-to-back no-hitters in the high school playoffs as a senior. At his senior day in both basketball and baseball, said that he's going to Howard Junior College in hopes of going to the University of Texas to pitch. And then he ends up as a Longhorn in about a crazy week and a half sequence. Go check that out at orangewoods.com if you want to find more about Bryce Elder. But he passed another test and looks like the real deal. Blair Henley, this was a big start on Saturday for Blair Henley. He had that one bad inning where 1-4 against LSU just tattooed him four straight times for really, really loud hits. But you know what? He bounced back and put up zeros in every single other inning. And that's the Blair Henley Texas needs. The guy that, you know, this stuff is never an issue. It's really just a matter of the competitiveness and going out and executing. And he was handed a big lead. He didn't let that big inning from LSU get to him. He got out of that inning, and then he put up zero after zero after zero after that. And that's the Blair Henley that Texas needs. If Texas can get that Blair Henley on a consistent basis, suddenly their rotation is in a much, much better place. And Coy Cobb, I thought he had the best changeup he's had all season. His fastball command was good at times not good. The breaking ball is still a total work in progress. He competed well. I don't think he was as bad as his numbers. I think that he, you know, if he continues to have that kind of changeup and just continues to refine the fastball command, he's going to get a lot of guys out. He's going to be capable of putting together some quality starts. So while I still have some questions about the Saturday and Sunday positions for the Texas rotation, they showed this weekend that there is some potential there. But really, one of the stories of the weekend was just the bullpen. The Texas bullpen is shaking up to be really, really good. And if you've listened to this podcast a bunch before or followed the work at orangewoods.com, you knew that this Texas pitching staff has a lot of stuff. Stuff is not an issue. And they've got a lot of guys that are going to come out of the bullpen throwing hard and probably either have a really good changeup or a really good breaking ball. And some of the guys have both. I didn't expect this Texas bullpen to be doing what it's doing right now. And you know, this weekend, Cameron Fields came in the Friday night game, shut the door behind Bryce Elder with 2 1/3 shutout innings. Cole Quintanilla came in the Saturday game, threw the final three innings, shutout innings, only gave one hit, punched out seven. He was completely dominant. And then you look at that that Sunday game, and while Mateo Boki had some issues, his defense really didn't help him at all. Brandon Ivey got out of a jam after he walked a lefty. He got the next lefty out. And then they handed the ball off to Mason Bryant, who was really good. And then Ty Madden, who was good as well. I think Bryant struck out 4 1⅔. And then Madden tossed 2 scoreless to finish the game. And you look at Cameron Fields, Cole Quintanilla, Mason Bryant, Ty Madden, Donnie Diaz, and Owen Meany. All those guys are thrown in the back end of games or will throw in the back end of games. I think that that's probably where Meany will end up, although he might end up being a midweek guy. I think that that midweek starting spot is probably best for Mateo Boeke, but they're still going to need they've got a double midweek coming up with Arkansas, so they're going to need another starter for one of those games. So, but I think Meany with his changeup and his stuff kind of profiles as a back-end guy down the road. So you take all those pitchers. They've thrown 40 innings this season. They have a 0.44 ERA, 124 batting average against. They're striking out 11.9 guys per 9 innings, and they're issuing 3.7 walks. That is outstanding. And look at the names on that list. Sophomore, redshirt freshman, 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 redshirt sophomore that came into this year having never pitched at Texas, and true freshman. And you're still not even counting guys like Colby Kubicek, who's starting to kind of come on a little bit. Jack Neely's been a mess to start this season, but he's going to be better down the road. It's just there's so much talent with this pitching staff, and you're starting to really see it show. And the great thing for Texas is a lot of these guys, like I said, are referencing their age. They're just figuring it out, or they're not even really figuring it out yet, or they're not even up to a place velocity-wise where they will be later in the season. This staff is still going to struggle to throw strikes at some times. That's just kind of the nature of having a really young pitching staff. You're going to have games occasionally like Wednesday against UTSA, Sunday against Louisiana, where there's just a lot of walks happen. I believe heading into this weekend, that Sunday game at Louisiana and the UTSA game Wednesday accounted for, I think, 54.2% of all of Texas' walks this season. So besides those games, Texas has done a pretty good job of not walking guys. But those games are going to happen. They just are when you're dealing with young arms like this. But the stuff is really starting to show. And particularly guys like Quintanilla, man, has he just been dominant. I mean, he's out there. Like, it's not even like he breaks a sweat. He barely shows any emotion. He just goes after dudes. I mean, it's a very lively fastball, up to about 94 on occasion. He flashed a 97 once at Rice. And then he's got a really power breaking ball that just gets a lot of very uncomfortable takes and swings and misses. And he's coming at you with this angle. I think he's listed at 6'3 or 6'4. But he really does a great job of getting angle on his pitches and driving them down. I mean, he is tough to handle. He looks like a future monster. I think that as long as Henley keeps throwing the way he did Saturday, they can leave Quintanilla in the bullpen. But I think it's going to be tempting to put him in the rotation at some point if there's any struggles there, because I think long-term that's where he profiles best. But right now, he looks like one of the best relievers in the Big 12. Hell, maybe even the country. I mean, he went out 7 strikeouts against LSU, 1 hit against that lineup. He got through the lineup multiple times. Or he got to the top of the lineup again for the second time. He didn't get through multiple times. He was so good. That's just outstanding stuff. So this Texas staff as a team this year now has a 198 batting average against, 2.77 ERA, and it has 111 strikeouts in 117 innings. The stuff is really showing. And they didn't, like I said, Louisiana didn't have a great lineup. They had a couple guys that can swing it. Purdue, top of the order, was okay. It was pretty solid, pretty scrappy. But the LSU test was big to see, okay, can this stuff play at this level, and can you execute it? And Texas proved it can do that. So if you're just diving in a little late, or you kind of skipped ahead a little bit, we're talking about the LSU series here on the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBlitz.com, just going through my main takeaways about the Longhorns after their sweep this weekend against then number two ranked LSU. Texas actually moved up the polls 10 spots in the two polls I pay attention to most. D1 Baseball, they're up to number 12. In Baseball America, they're up to number 9. I always use the D1 Baseball rankings. It's because they cover it like nobody else. They've got guys everywhere really paying attention and talking to people and covering it better than anybody in the country. So the Longhorns make big moves in the polls. That matters a lot to fans. I don't think it really matters that much to Texas. What matters is you get series wins and you beat quality teams, and that's exactly what Texas did this weekend. And just kind of a larger point, I thought the Texas coaching staff ran circles around Paul Maneri this weekend. I was stunned in both the Friday and Saturday games that Texas was basically just able to steal a base whenever it wanted to. They would put a hit run on. They would steal first pitch. They were doing double steals. And a lot of times these were uncontested plays. It just Texas kept running on LSU pitchers over and over and over again. And the one time LSU pitched out, Texas didn't steal. It's just really weird to see the number two team in the country basically just either wave the white flag late in the game or just totally not be prepared for Texas to be so aggressive on the bases. It was weird to watch in a way. Like, this is the number two team in the country? This is a team that some people had number one in the country? Like, it was almost like LSU was just kind of there and taking it. They didn't really put up much of a fight, and that starts with the guy in charge. So kudos to David Pierce and his staff, man. They scouted LSU better than LSU scouted Texas. I mean, Paul Maneri told reporters after the game that we weren't really ready for Bryce Elder's cutter. We thought he throws sinker 75% of the time. It takes you one batter to watch Bryce Elder and know that he's going to throw a cutter, and he's going to throw it a lot. And then he told reporters that Elder threw something like 75% cutters. No, he threw like 40%. Perhaps Maneri should stop telling people that Texas offered him the job, which didn't happen. It met with him. It didn't offer the job. It met with him because he called Texas out there and said, hey, I'm interested. Come meet with me. And then when Texas went out there and met with him, he immediately went to his athletic director and said, hey, Texas is going to, you know, they offer me the job. I need a raise. So he got his pat on the back. He got to feel good about himself and he got a raise. And, you know, Texas saw through that and never offered them a job. So, you know, maybe he should stop telling people that Texas offered them a job and get a better scout of the next pitcher. Because if you don't think Bryce Elder is going to throw cutters, you've never watched Bryce Elder or you've never talked to anybody about Bryce Elder. You could search Bryce Elder on Twitter and say, oh, a lot of people are mentioning that this guy throws a cutter or a slider. You know, maybe we should look into that. The Texas coaching staff just did a much better job than LSU's. LSU didn't use its personnel well. Texas maximized its personnel. LSU just, you know, didn't really play with a lot of toughness. Texas clearly played with a lot of toughness. Texas executed better in the batter's box. They had a more consistent approach. They got on base more. They stole more bases. They were more aggressive. They pitched better. They just looked like a team that was ready to play, ready to compete. And LSU did not look like that. And even in that instance when LSU took the lead, a lot of that was because Texas handed them the lead. You know, they had that one inning where they pounded Henley around Saturday. And other than that, you can make a case that Texas kind of aided LSU in all of its run scoring changes. So I think Texas fans, if they don't already, should feel really good about the coaching staff that's in place in Austin running their baseball program. From Phil Hague and his work with the pitchers, to Philip Miller and his work with the catchers and those guys, to Sean Allen, what he does with the hitters, to David Pearson really running things and helping with the pitchers. I think tip of the hat to all those guys because they really put a team out on the field this weekend that was ready to compete and that was prepared, that was ready for LSU. And I don't think the same thing happened in that visiting dugout. That to me was just startling at how better prepared Texas was and how much better coached it looked than LSU. I mentioned Duke Ellis's insane stat about the 85 pitches and getting on base as much as he did, going through my notes here, and Ryan Reynolds and what season he had as well. But really just Texas completely outplayed LSU in the first two games. And then just the way they came back and won Sunday's game says a lot about their character and who they are. Moving forward, what does this do for Texas in terms of expectations about this season? I will still caution people, you know, maybe somebody should insert the Debbie Downer sound clip here from Saturday Night Live. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer because I believe I wrote this after seeing them in the alumni game. I came away liking that Texas team more than I thought I would in terms of specifically the positional players. With the pitching, you just don't know. You know the stuff. You can go out and see the stuff in the fall or in the preseason. You know, this guy throws this when he's right, blah, blah, blah. But how it translates with those young guys, you just don't really know until they get out there on the mound. So the stuff was never an issue. The execution was going to be a question mark. So far, great for Texas in terms of execution. You look at their slate coming up, and it starts this weekend at Stanford. I know they play UT Rio Grande Valley Tuesday. That game actually got moved up to 4:30 p.m. because of it's going to be freezing by nighttime. I really wish they'd just cancel that game. I mean, it's an RPI killer anyway. Might as well just cancel that thing. But if you look at Texas's upcoming schedule, at Stanford this weekend for a four-game series, and Stanford is, I believe, number six in the latest D1 baseball rankings. Yes, that's correct, number six. So Texas is about to begin a 14-game stretch that includes four games at number six Stanford, a home series versus number 13 Texas Tech, back-to-back midweek games at home against number 15 Arkansas, and then a road series at number 23 TCU. It is brutal moving forward. I mean, it's a really, really tough schedule. So I think Texas fans should keep that in mind because not every series is going to go like LSU. It's just not. It wouldn't surprise me if they split at Stanford this weekend. Stanford's a really good club with a deep pitching staff, as Texas, you know, saw last year when they played them. And then Texas Tech is one of the better teams in the country. Arkansas is obviously good. And then and going on the road at TCU will be tough. They've got two of the better starting pitchers in the Big 12. So there's that to consider. But I think you're kidding yourself if you said this weekend doesn't raise the potential of this Texas team this season. I think that everything's on the table now. I think that this team is capable of winning the Big 12. I think they're capable of having a season similar to last season in and at the College World Series. And I think the most encouraging thing for Texas and its fans is while Texas swept LSU this weekend, Texas can play much better than it did. Even in those two games when it played well, Friday and Saturday, and totally outplayed LSU, Texas could have played better in those games. And Sunday definitely could have played better. I mean, it booted the ball around. They had some miscues pitching-wise at times. They weren't able to get on base as much earlier in the game. They still found a way to win the game. Like, this Texas team, where this team is at right now is not its end product. There is definitely room for growth as it relates to the potential of this team. And I think that that's something that should really excite Texas fans because there are going to be some growing pains. Again, the schedule's tough. It's asking too much of this team to go and just win every upcoming series, to go on the road and beat Stanford and then beat Tech at home and then beat TCU on the road and then take the two in midweek in Arkansas. That's just, it's not realistic. But the LSU series by sweeping them shows that the level that this Texas team can reach this season just increased. It went up a level. Before this season, I thought that this was maybe a super regional type team that could get in there and just would come up short in the super regional. Looking on paper before the season, you had to like just the depth of the pitching to potentially get them through a regional. Now I think that it's more than a super regional. There is a real chance if Texas maximizes what it's shown so far and it gets some positive injury luck and things like that, they could get back to the College World Series. I wouldn't bet on it at this point. I'm not telling you to book your travel. I don't think it's far from a lock. There are some areas this Texas team really needs to get better at, and I think that the main area is defense. The defense might end up being determining if this can be an Omaha team or if it's going to be a team that comes up short in the postseason. They've got to get better defensively. And I'm not quite sure how much better they're going to get. The middle of the infield's probably going to be an adventure all year. It just is. Bryce Regan's had some really, really bright moments, but he's a freshman playing a really tough position. Mason Hibler has kind of been shaky at times at second base. Tate Shaw quietly got better at first base over the weekend, and I think that he's going to have to play that position a lot because DJ Petrinski didn't play all weekend. He didn't even take infield Sunday. I think that shoulder injury had a setback, and it's more significant than David Pierce is letting on. But Tate Shaw got better over the weekend after he started it rough by dropping that pickoff throw in the first inning against LSU. So maybe first base gets better. Left field, Kennedy's an adventure. He can hit, but man, the instincts defensively need reps. So let's say that at worst he becomes, you know, a below average or an average guy out there in left field. It's not a given that he's going to get way better this year defensively. I think Reynolds is going to eliminate some of the miscues. He's just too talented of a defensive player to keep doing that. So I wouldn't really worry about that spot. But the middle infield is going to be an issue. Catching, I mean, Michael McCann, tough as nails, gritty dude, competes his ass off. Really good in the throwing game so far, but he does struggle catching hard-throwing guys with good stuff. You just see it sometimes. The pass balls happen or the blocks don't happen. And Texas, I mean, if Petrinsky can't catch, because I mean, I think at this point it'd be a surprise if he caught any games this year, they really need Michael McCann to stay healthy. So the defense to me is what could determine just this team's ceiling, because they're going to have clunkers on the mound in games, but the potential of this pitching staff is really starting to show. And I think the offense, while it doesn't have stars right now in the lineup, top to bottom, it's got a bunch of guys that compete. And it's got a collection of guys that can provide the big hitter, get on base, or, you know, put together big innings by just kind of keeping the thing going. And that's what something that Texas has proven this year. So definitely this LSU series that kind of raised the bar that this Texas team can meet this season. I'm not saying they will. You got to consider that we're not even third into the season yet. But you're lying to yourselves if you watch that Texas team this weekend sweep LSU and said to yourself, still the same team I thought they were. Hell no, they're not the same team you thought they were. And I think that that's something David Pearson and his guys are realizing right now. He was very high on this team's character and makeup heading into the season. But he basically said, I don't remember the exact quote, but he said something like, we'll find out if we're talented enough. And we're starting to see that talent. It's not a loaded roster top to bottom, but it's a talented pitching staff, although young, a talented pitching staff. And it's got a lineup that could be consistently solid 1-9. So I think Texas fans should be very, very excited about the potential of this season now, as long as they also keep in mind that this tough schedule is not going anywhere. It's not going to always go like it went this weekend against LSU. And by the way, again, the atmosphere this weekend at UFC Dishfalk Field was electric. Even in that Sunday game where it wasn't a packed house, I mean, people were pumping energy into that place. And it undoubtedly makes an impact with those guys on the field. It really does. So with that, we'll wrap up the latest edition of the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Thank you for listening. Texas fans, you should be excited about just the potential of this team, where it could end up this season. And, you know, 4A weekend, Texas baseball was the story on the 40 acres. And when's the last time we could say that about Texas baseball in early March or in late February? It just hasn't happened in a long, long time. So I think Texas fans should be excited, and they should be all in on this group to see if they can take them on another ride similar to last season. So we'll wrap that up. Try to stay warm this week. I know it's freezing pretty much everywhere. It is freezing here in Austin, Texas. Stay warm. Thank you for listening to the Extra Bases podcast on yak.com. To get to the yak.com, check out all of our great podcast content. And until next time I talk to you, we'll cover more, probably some Major League Baseball stuff on the next edition of the Extra Bases podcast, maybe some Bryce Harper discussion and things like that. And then probably another podcast before Texas heads out to Stanford to begin that series. That's a 4-game series that begins on Thursday. So until then, take care. Thank you for listening.